4, strap it down. 3, flip it over. 2, calibrating for fun. Blast off! Welcome to the Dan Fogler 40 Experience Podcast. Get ready.
Oh man, how you guys doing? Welcome.
Awesome.
Welcome to the comic book roundtable at Fogler's Fiction Fest. Man, God damn it, I'm happy to see a lot of you people here. Most of you, all of you. Okay, let me do a little introductions, and then Jeff is really going to be the host of this because he's an amazing interviewer, and we'll talk about him. Let's talk about him. So Jeff has interviewed everybody that you've ever loved or ever had any idol, any kind of person that you're just like, yeah, did he interview the boss? Yes. Did he interview Hunter S. Thompson? Yeah. He's like, if you have someone that or any rock star, I mean, there's a lot of people he's interviewed. You can ask him during the course of this. So Justin Molman is my producing partner. I couldn't have done this without him. He was there at the very beginning of this, helping me package all this stuff. And fuck, man, thank you a million times.
It's been like almost 4 years.
I know you guys for a nice chunk of time here, man. Through heavy metal, that's how I met you. And then Andrew Harrison, I met him. We were at some crazy Zen retreat. I was like, this guy is cool. Yeah. And then we just started talking about Moon Lake and whatever he was writing, a bunch of great stuff. He'll tell you what he writes. He's doing amazing stuff now. I'm so happy to see you, man. You dropped off the planet for a second, and I was just like reaching out, and our books were coming onto shelves, and I was like, fuck, we got to share this. Because I'm elated, but he was there when I started putting the second volume of Moon Lake together, which is my Twilight Zone.
And that was in 2012 when you were 50-50 as to whether the Mayan prophecy would end.
Yeah, I was making a movie called Don Peyote.
But you still were like, let's do all this work.
Yeah, literally, we're doing it right now. Look, could be the apocalypse right now. We're still like, Fogler's Fiction, IR Comics. Like, what the fuck? What else can we do? And so I love this guy. I got love for all you guys, but Andrew is like a real brother here. He helped me package and did a lot of writing for the second volume of Moon Lake. And then when I got to Brooklyn Gladiator, I was like, man, I'm getting really busy here. I got this idea for this dystopian sci-fi book. And I handed him like this. I was like, you're a good writer. I like where your head's at. And I handed him like, what is it, like 25 pages of like elaborate outline of how the first, arc would go. I handed it to him. And he like chiseled away, and he basically helped morph all of that I gave him into Brooklyn Gladiator Zero with the Glenn Fabry cover and
great cover,
which Dennis was the MVP on, Dennis Calero, because he came in and helped us color it at the last fucking second when we were trying to sell it. And so Dennis has, been a buddy ever since that. I mean, I'm not done, praising all these guys. Well, when Andrew talks, he's doing amazing things now. Dennis Calero, if you saw the animation that we did for my podcast, we showed that earlier after the impressions with Ross Marquand. Dennis was responsible for that. Dennis also we put out this new, we repackaged volume one of Moon Lake, and we put new material in. So there's new material in this. And Dennis did the Camelot, Mr. Spacetime meets the Zombie King story.
A lot of fun. Story,
which was a lot of fun. And it's like Army of Darkness tribute, basically.
I think of it as Excalibur on acid.
Yeah, a lot of my stuff is on acid. and then
I haven't even seen that omnibus yet. That looks amazing.
Oh yeah, dude, you got to get it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you got to share in all the joy I have here. I got all the books here. It's fucking great. And Karen Beasley. Let me tell you something. This is the biz, man. This is Simon. This is Simon Beasley, everybody. I picked up a Lobo magazine comic book.
I corrupted you as well. Go on.
Yeah, you corrupted me, man. Heavy metal and your covers and Lobo. And you had such an influence on me. So when I started making my books, I was like, Ben McCool is another guy that couldn't be here. He you know, peppered in some of his genius into Brooklyn Gladiator. Yeah. He knows Simon as well as Heidi McDonald. And the two of them said, yeah, we know Simon Beasley. And I said, you do? And they were, and I was like, can you make an introduction? Because I would love to work with him. Even if we just did covers, I got to talk. I got to talk to Simon a little bit, and I convinced him to fucking do interiors. I was like, so I'm just a kid. I'm a kid in the candy store.
Thanks for playing so well.
Hey man, listen.
And so quickly.
What I'll say is
that's a big deal in comics. It's a big deal.
That is a big deal, and
people get paid.
People of your Simon, people of your caliber deserve to get paid quickly, and they, you know, and so I give a lot of I just got a lot of love for him. I also Ben Temple Smith, who did Fish Kill.
Yeah,
these are guys who I have so much love for, and I can't believe I got to work with them. And so you know, Jeff, take it away, man.
Yeah, thanks, right. What a great group, man! Congratulations on getting all these people together. It's awesome.
They're all amazing.
I was going to start with Simon or Karen. as you look at comics now, and as you look at the comics that you're doing, if it doesn't sound too touchy-feely, what do you see these days as like your biggest challenge and your biggest opportunity as like an artist and as a creator? What, you know, when you look back on the things you've done and the things you're doing now, where do you find the things that challenge you, and what do you see as the thing that you're most excited about?
Well, I'm most excited about actually doing my own stuff now, working on my own projects. Over the years, I've stored up so many ideas and sketches and ideas. I want to do the ultimate pieces. So I'm actually currently doing those, which will be revealed at some point in my life. Basically, I want to go to my grave, you know, like making amends for some of the shit I did before. So what makes me excited? I think what makes me excited is other people getting excited. If everyone's excited, then we all feed up each other's energy. You know, what gets me excited is really good work, good art, good stories, and that just fires me straight up, and that makes you want to get into it. You know.
Yeah. And what about as far as the textures and the look of your art? I remember those Lobo, the art just jumping off the page. And it looks so different than the other stuff I've seen around that time. Did you incorporate a lot of rock and roll album cover art or posters, or what other influence beyond comics did you kind of draw on?
Well, at the time I was riding around on a Harley Davidson chopper. I was building choppers. I had long hair. I was like bodybuilding, you know, doing all the drugs and shit. You know, my whole fucking thing. I was completely insane. I was wild, you know, and I was a comic book artist as well. So I was drawing all the energy from the music I enjoyed, and the bikers around me, the people around me. And at exciting times, we were young, you know, and life was right there for us, you know. So I feed off the energy of around what's around me. I suck it all up, because a lot of your best work's done not actually doing any work. It's done just hanging out at bars, talking to people, listening to what other people have to say about this and that and the other, you know, and even books and la-di-da, TV, films, and everything else. Just going for a ride on a bike, you know, you get fired up, and then you get down and you get the work done, and all your experiences go into the work.
Yeah, it's the good, rhythm of it.
The good and the bad. The very good and the very bad goes in there, you know.
Yeah.
You can't do anything about conviction unless you've lived something, you know. You lived it a little bit.
Yeah, that's one of the great things is when you see the really great art, it's when people are drawing life that they've had or experiences. They're not drawing somebody else's art, because you can see when people draw other people's art as opposed to when they kind of channel something that's a little authentic.
Yeah, we do. I think we do. We pilfer, we steal, we're thieves, we're vultures, we cannibalize. But that's what we do. If you lived in an attic, what would you draw? How would you know how to draw? So we draw from things we like, you know, whether it's like on purpose or not. You can see influences in people's writing, people influences in their art from other sources. Even I'm influenced by current artists, you know, and I steal their stuff but blend it in so they can't really notice.
Nice. Was it Neil Young said, professionals steal, amateurs borrow?
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
I was very annoyed in the old days when people ripped me off, but now I'm very glad of it because it means I was of worth, something mm-hmm. of worth.
Right. It's like the ongoing conversation between everybody in a way, right? Yeah. You know, collaboration's never been harder than it is these days because of the pandemic and everything that's going on. I was going to go through and talk to you guys about it. Andrew, for you, like, how do you stay connected to people and what is it that you see as like the place that you want to go? What's the horizon for your work these days?
Well, it's weird because, you know, when I met Dan, I'd had one book on like 215 Inc. and actually the, you know, getting involved with Moon Lake and Brooklyn Gladiator and stuff got my stuff out there, and I got enough kind of tendrils out there to actually, it really helped me get like where I am now, like, you know, Disney Games and Interactive. So having that, like, and that was, you know, I've been there for over 2 years now. And I mean, Justin, you've been doing this for a while, but for me, it was like, oh my God, I have a full-time job and I like it. What the fuck?
What is nuts, going right? on?
Yeah.
And you get paid.
Yeah. No, it's like totally crazy. So I got, you know, but I'm eager to get back into comics, especially now that the landscape is so like chaotic, you know, like it seems like a dangerous time for comics, but at the same time, it's like, you know, the time to invest is when there's blood in the streets, right?
Right.
So, you know, so I'm really, you know, I'm really excited to get back in there, you know?
Yeah, that's interesting because there's a lot of people that are worried about comics and worried about where they're going and how they're going. And just for Dennis, what are you worried about these days when you
think it's interesting that you bring this up. I don't worry about comics as a concept because words and pictures will always exist in some form. I worry about people.
Yeah.
I worry about my friends who draw them, write them, color them, letter them, to see them want to be employed. And it was very interesting what was just said because, yeah, the landscape has really shifted. I think, there's a little bit of inside baseball, so I'll keep it brief, but I think the two main things are that there was a question a few years ago whether all of these fans going to these superhero movies, right, Avengers and what have you, if any of that was going to translate into readership. And I think, sadly, the answer is not really, very little. I don't know why that is. I don't think anybody knows why that is. Because if they knew, they would have done it. And at the same time, it is a very chaotic field right now. And there's a lot of, it translates to a lot of opportunity. I mean, I've gotten to more and more work with great people like Dan and work with people like John Carpenter and Sandy and be invited to do my own stories and to also participate in stories that I really believe in situations that I'm more likely to benefit directly as an artist, as a writer, if things are successful. I think that's a net positive. How it all shakes out, I'm not really sure. It's. I think for right now, for people who are good at what they do and do what they say they're going to do when they say they're going to do it, I think it's a really good time.
Yeah. With the movie thing, I when Batman came out in 1989, Michael Uslan, one of the producers that kind of shepherded it to the screen, a few months after it came out, the editors from Marvel took him out and bought him lunch. And he's like, what is this? Why are you guys doing this? And they had experienced a 20% bump across the line from that movie. But that was really the first and last time that happened. You know, like you don't really see that anymore. And there's probably a bunch of reasons it's hard for fans to get the comics in some ways. The stories aren't connected to the movies in any
I think that's a big factor.
I think it's literally just because attention spans have shrunk. people just don't want to read. They'd rather just watch.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I think that's true, that readership. Yeah. Yeah, reading is definitely down in general, which concerns us all more than ever. But I think Jeff made a really good point about kids, because I've seen it. Kids picking up a comic, they've just seen a Spider-Man movie, they're super excited, and they pick up the comic and they don't know what they're looking at. They don't see the characters that they know and love, which is why I've always said that Marvel should have a line of cinema comics that are just focused on these are the storylines from the films, and use it as a gateway to corrupt them and hook them into our passion. Yeah. But no one listens to me.
It's interesting because Star Wars is why I started reading comics. I the first comic books I read were the Star Wars comics that Marvel put out in 77. You know, that's the first thing I remember reading, and then went into everything else, and eventually got to heavy metal because, I mean, come on, boobs. You got to love that. So, but there is, it's interesting the way things dovetail and sometimes don't. Mm-hmm. Justin, you were talking about the sort of competition between, I think you were talking about the competition between, if you put a stack of comics in front of kids and you put a smartphone in front of kids, they're going to die for the smartphone.
Yeah.
But also we see a lot of exciting things, you know, exchange between different media and medium,
for sure.
It's video games, comics, films, and things like that.
Yeah.
Tell me something that you see there that you think is really cool. And how much have video games affected the way comics or storytelling goes, for instance?
I mean, it's interesting because if you look what a comic book is, especially, I think me and Dan have had this conversation a bunch of times, because the comic book is literally just a really detailed storyboard in a lot of ways based off a script that leads to either becoming a TV show or movie or a video game. And I've been doing games now for 20 years. And when I first started, it's crazy because every single console generation, there's more power, which means you get more memory, which means all of a sudden that character that couldn't move its fingers can go like this and grab something, or it can open its mouth and talk or have more emotion. So especially with the PlayStation 5 and the new Xbox coming out, you see more of a blend of cinematic coming into it, just more and more. I mean, and then look at even like the how much tech is coming out. So right now I work at Epic Games, and our tech, Unreal, we use for like obviously like Fortnite and a lot of PlayStation 5 games, Gears of War and stuff. But if it's being used to create the backgrounds and art for the Mandalorian, for the new Batman, for Disney movie.
Yeah.
So I think it's cool seeing how much more like we have way more tools than video games, but it allows us to literally go to a comic book and use that as a really detailed storyboard that it gives us established time frames. I can pull from it settings, objects, characters, plots, and all that stuff just turns into, all right, cool. Even like Brooklyn Gladiator, me and Dan had these conversations like that you can easily make that a game. Because it gives you the hero character. You got like you can literally, if you want to make it old school, like an arcade game, just take some of these characters and make them mini bosses or like big bosses, and just like it's easily transferable. I think
it's fascinating when that synergy happens. You know, like you look at a movie like Sin City, or you look at a movie like Scott Pilgrim, and the way that they're influenced by the storytelling on the page. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that movies don't do that comics often do is. Or should do is take chances. You know, like, I mean, things in comics can really get, that's where it is a storyboard. So you know, that's why Jack Kirby was 50 years ahead of Hollywood, is because he had the unlimited special effects budget of his pen and his ink.
Exactly. Well, man, think about it. Like, if someone has an idea, who's going to sit down and try to, I watched this TV show called Silicon Valley, and they had this funny skit in it. And then they have a designer trying to create established visual language. So a lot of people who write or don't know how to do art, it's hard for them sometimes to translate what they want to do unless they start throwing in pop culture. Like, hey, it's going to look like aliens. It's going to play like Indiana Jones. The minute you get an artist in there, like Dennis or Karen over here, Simon, it starts to like with Brooklyn Gladiator, Dan doesn't have to really explain it. He just shows the cover and it's like, oh shit, now I get it.
It's true.
It speeds it up and it builds like the confidence that someone would want to do to invest in it to make it a show.
Yeah, Jeff, can I? Yeah, Jeff, go ahead.
I'm sorry, if I was wanting to interject really quick, I think that there's a really, for anybody out there that's interested in getting into comics, there was a point made just now that I think that was really powerful, which is that there was a point when comics could do things visually that TV and games could not do. Mm-hmm. Couldn't have a million spaceships, couldn't have all, you know, this Jack Kirby, even up to the 80s, 90s, all of this explosive action, these crazy concepts. And now, arguably, movies and TV shows could do that in a way that feels, in some ways, more immediate and more grounded than ever before. But what comics can do, to Jeff's point, is take risks, because, of course, video games, movies, TV cost an incredible, staggering amount of money. Money that, you know, in a way, it makes a lot of sense that if you're gambling that much money, you're going to be risk averse. And comics, that's much like the portrait painter when the camera was invented. Comics artists and writers have to shift our perspective and start to focus on the things that these other mediums can't do. And one of those things, and I wanted to just draw attention to the point, is take risks, tell different kinds of stories, so that, you know, there is a reality that comics are surviving largely today as test beds for IP to be moved onto more lucrative platforms. But there still is and always will be an audience for stories that take risks and do things that just live and breathe in comics. And I think that's the beauty of comics and the beauty of graphic novels is that there is an audience of people who will take these stories to heart that are different, that can't live in any other medium. And we have to cherish that. That was my only point.
No, it's a great point.
I wish someone had explained that as eloquently as you did to AT&T. 6 months ago.
Are we going there?
Yeah.
Nice.
I gotta be careful.
I was trying to explain it to him, but they dropped my call. So what can I do?
But it makes sense what you said, Dennis, because it's like there's something about holding it, but also if you see a lot of these, like I've sat in calls for like projects to get greenlit, and they, could we do this? But let's shave this off because we don't want to offend this person, or we don't want to offend this thing. We don't want to. It, or this could cost too much to do, or we don't know what to do. It with comics, you can do whatever you want. And I think that's initially why I loved always checking out like heavy metal, for example, because I felt like anything went there. Like
it's very punk rock that way. Yeah.
If someone had an idea and like a different publisher's like, no, we have to keep ours a little bit more PG. Cool, go over there. You can keep the boobs.
But it was always a cheap test. It's a cheap test bed.
Exactly.
Yeah,
I mean, you do it like there's no money raised, there's no real money spent. If it works, then you can translate it to the movie.
Yeah.
And it's the singular. Sometimes you get these singular voices. I mean, film is the most collaborative art. Film and television are the most collaborative arts of all because it takes an army of people to do something, and you can still have an auteur presence that can express him or herself in a powerful way. But then you look at something like a Frank Miller comic book or a Mobius story, and I mean there you're getting what Picasso, I mean, not trying to,
no, yeah, that's you're doing, that's an
getting what Picasso's reaction to photography was, is I can't draw a perfect portrait of every human being like a camera can, but I can find out what's going on in behind the time and molecules of these objects, you know, dig deeper in a different way, you know.
I always think of the Beaux-Arts students that when photography was becoming really prevalent, and they were like, when abstract stuff was becoming really prevalent, like Braque and Picasso, people like that, and these were people that were classically trained, and they're like, well, what do we do now? And some of them became surrealists. They said, well, yeah, you know, again, it's what can we do that other mediums can't do? I think comics, I think that there's a large number of artists and writers who sort of want to still act like this is the 80s and the 90s, and are frustrated. And to your point earlier, they don't see that the opportunities that are coming up, that's created by things aren't going to be the way they were. They're just not. They never are, you know. But we can there's still ways to apply the basic talents of crafting a story and illustrating it. And there's always a way to apply those things.
Yeah. And Dan, how are you?
Fucking baked, man.
Dan, are you in the UK?
Yeah, I'm in the UK. It's late.
Oh, God.
I'm running on fumes. I have no sleep. I'm shooting Fantastic Beasts. I'm fucking coordinating this whole thing. But I'm listening. I was actually just sitting back and going, look at this. Look at these guys. I love them. I'm sitting here and I'm just like looking at the comic books and just like, I'm a kid in the candy store, man. I am the guy who's still nostalgic and is living in the 80s and 90s. So you got the books right there. So,
oh, yeah.
So when you talk about how
I got the picture ones too.
And then I want to really talk about Brooklyn Gladiator for a second. So when you talk about, I'm always thinking multilaterally franchisable. That's how I grew up, man. So Moon Lake specifically is an homage to Twilight Zone and Heavy Metal, the movie specifically, which I saw a million fucking times. Right. So it built into it that it is a TV show. And we're like making an animated show right now. We're in the middle of, we're putting that together. So let's talk about Brooklyn Gladiator for a second. Simon, are you a fan of George St. Pierre? You know, the MMA guy?
Well, you know who he is? I don't know who that is.
It's just this guy.
Okay, so George St. Pierre is like...
I may have seen him.
GSP, okay? So he's like the... He's probably like known as the GOAT, like the greatest of all time in mixed martial arts. He was sitting next to me at a Comic-Con. He was like... That guy kind of looks like me, and he does, and he wants to be in it. So I'm in the middle of adapting a movie. Andrew, I'm gonna send that over to you when I'm finished with it. Just to come full circle, brother. And so here are the books that are out on shelves now. So we got, I got Simon Beasley. Okay, so Karen Beasley. So we got the first issue, which has been out for 4 months. We got the second issue. I love this fucking cover; it's so badass. And then this is the one that's out now. It just came out. Look at that! Holy shit! Man.
I love the yellow on that. That just pops so good.
It really does. It
really
looks very lurid.
Yellow is an underrated color,
and it's. Classic, like I grew up on heavy metal, man. So, there's the fucking Simon Beasley lady, man. Okay, so I'm just so fucking excited. So there's a lot going on with that. The other thing that's going on is Fishkill, which
Fishkill. Come on.
Is the prequel to Brooklyn Gladiator, because I was writing Brooklyn Gladiator. I was like, holy shit, we are living in the sci-fi dystopian insanity right now.
Oh, boy, brother.
These are the seeds that...
Weird.
This book is coming out real soon, and these are the books that are out now. So,
Fishkill reminds me of my marriage, and Brooklyn Gladiator reminds me of my divorce.
This one comes out next week.
Got dark real quick.
I saw that yellow color and it just took me back to the.
Does that remind you of your divorce too, right there?
Splurge.
Splurge.
That's the noise of my heart bouncing on the pavement.
It's a rough time for dystopian genre.
It is.
You try to pack it in there, and then all of a sudden, and then you're like, this is great. And then like some Jamiroquai looking buffalo man usurps the Republic. You're like, oh no, I got to start all over. What the fuck? Dude,
Jamiroquai, that's a pole right there.
It's a deep pole. But or is it like the blues when people feel sad? They, people feel something, they want something to reflect what they're feeling rather than just to escape it. So maybe it's the perfect time.
Well, it's interesting, right? Because like when you have really good times, sci-fi pushes toward kind of darkness, and then other times sci-fi pushes toward positivity. I mean, you look like Star Trek, no matter what happens, it's still inherently positive or optimistic. As opposed to like Mad Max or Terminator, where it's like, you know, skulls are going to get crushed, stepped on.
Right.
And there's some people too that, like, if you look at, you know, what's the book that, oh gosh, I can't think of the name of it right now, Neon Future, where, you know, that comic's about idealizing when humans finally give in and make ourselves embracing technology, like right. We've always seen like becoming less human as a negative consequence in fiction. Now it's being put forward as the goal, which is kind of interesting, you know. But
right.
Dan, you were talking about growing up with heavy metal, and you know, you were saying that you're still back then. Well, I mean, you appreciate that era, but the stuff you're doing is not. It's not like echoing past. It's like a Tarantino thing where you're taking the familiar stuff of the past and then kind of shoving it into your own really twisted, depraved world. So that's, you know, that's a positive. That's forward, dude. That's forward. That's not backward.
Wait, what were you just talking about right before that? I was gonna say something.
Fucking idea. Are you kidding? No, I don't know. The Neon Future.
Oh yes, nice. I got it. I haven't smoked too much weed. So I think that as in doing this, writing dystopian sci-fi Brooklyn Gladiator, which has at the core of it become how is technology a tool, or are we the fucking tool of the technology? Mm-hmm. Or are we stronger without the scaffolding of technology as John Miller blossoms as a fucking psychic Jedi? So I think that, but hey, what does that sound like? Fucking Star Wars? Where, you know, Luke, it's the yin yang, man. Luke has a little bit of tech. He has to have the tech because, man, it's a tool. But yeah. Fucking Vader is the fucking tech.
Right, right, and, right.
But that's the evil versus good. Like, is tech evil? And no, it's not. It can be used for good. That's why it's the yin yang. You have a little bit of good inside the evil and a little bit of evil inside the good. So it's this, I see it as this constant, all of these things are connected by this question of technology versus what are we capable of without it if we just get rid of the fucking crutches.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's so often been that flip where humanity loses touch with its heritage or its essence.
Essential nature, yeah.
Yeah, and is taken over or destroyed or threatened by the thing that it very much created. But like what you're saying is like guns don't kill people. People kill people, but do cyborgs kill people or people kill people? But I think cyborgs actually do kill people. But, you know, it depends. But
they've currently been designed to, aren't they?
Yeah.
I mean, they're currently designed to. You can't tell me that fucking robot dog, it won't take long. How long does it take to stick a gun on it? Do you know what I mean?
And now we're back to my marriage.
Again, robot dog in it with a gun.
Yeah.
Is that what your book is about, Simon?
But don't worry about it. Just paint everything yellow. It'll be fine.
I just remembered something from earlier that just came up from my subconscious. Simon, I would love to see. I would love to see you write a book that is you, kind of like a Christmas future, present, and past kind of thing, but with like fucking Lobo or I don't know, like something like that, where you kind of are put through. You know, the trials, you know, like fucking Hercules has to go into the underworld you know, come out. I want to see that story with you as the fucking hero.
The Last Temptation of Karen Bisley.
Wow. Holy shit. Fell on my chair.
No one's what do you think
of that, man? I would love to fucking see it.
Fine, we'll talk about it. It's an idea. That's a good idea. I like it.
Yeah.
Do you guys just run it down? Do you find that you think that you are inherently optimistic or inherently pessimistic in your storytelling or your the storytelling that attracts you? Do you or is that too simplistic? Is it just it's good or bad? Do you it's not about the theme.
Elaborate.
I like putting.
Well, I mean, like you know, James Cameron, he inherently believes. I mean, you could that. If we give ourselves over to technology too much, we'll lose something essential in us and our connection to nature, and therefore we'll be pulled down. So if it's a sci-fi story, it's going to have a negativity to it. Other people, you know, like we were talking about, like that really they see technology as just a natural extension of the human body. It's just the next part of the soul that hasn't been connected yet. That would be much, or Gene Roddenberry, like I said, is inherently optimistic. His is like, we got to go discover stuff. It'll be great. And we'll, people will try and kill us, but you know, it'll be okay. You know,
with Paul Verhoeven, it's just all about co-ed locker rooms. That's the whole thing.
Yeah, that's true. And you know, wow, that was the most jolting moment of my youth watching films, is when they just start taking showers again. I'm like, what? it's like Porky's, but no one thinks it's a bad, or I just wasn't like, I would have voted for him for president if he had run back then.
Well, things will just go back to nature anyway. Regardless, things will go back to nature if shit hit the man, because the technology couldn't survive without man manipulating it or having some kind of control over it. It can't be mechanically. I mean, I don't know if they can get machines to self-sustaining. They're not biological.
Until they are.
I was waiting for that. Yeah, well, there you go. So there we write about it, and then we have something to write about.
Right. Do we write about it in a way that you're happy about it, or a way that you're cautionary tale? Well, it's not so much the events, it's the attitude of the storytelling.
I like the cautionary tale where you give a little of a little wisdom, you know, a little medicine with the sugar. But I like even like something like Terminator, which is so fucking bleak. There's still that hope and that humans can be a fucking, you know, a monkey in the wrench, you know, like a fucking a monkey wrench in the system. You know what I mean? And I like that the human potential is limitless. So we don't even know what the fuck we're capable of. So fuck technology.
People forget in Terminator, the humans had won. That's how the story begins. The humans had already won, and sending back the Terminator was a last ditch effort on the part of Skynet. So I actually see that as a positive thing.
We had them up against the ring.
I've always been more Star Trek I'm not a nihilist. I think that we're simply pragmatically speaking, we're a very successful species because we are good at seeing existential threats, and more of us seem to align against that than not. There's always some people that unfortunately, want authoritarianism and want people to tell them what to do. But little by little, over time, over eras, we've gone from, you know, cavemen hitting each other over the head, kings and people being in charge, to little by little developing this idea of democracy and this idea that everyone's opinion should matter. And little by little, we refine and crystallize the idea of what it is to be a human being. And so just as any human person, I think, dropped into America from 200 years ago would probably freak out and not understand what's going on, we would probably look at, you know, our society 500 years in the future and not understand, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's not better. I think that we have, as a species, a unique attribute of consistent self-improvement. At the end of the day, things could be a lot worse even than they are. I mean, like we're in the middle of a historic pandemic. Thank God we have the internet. Thank God we have food deliveries. Thank God we have all of the, you know, we concentrate on people not wearing masks and people not doing what they're supposed to do. But there are so many people who are wearing masks, so many people who are doing what they're supposed to do, and lessening the impact of what could be potentially a species ending event. And
spoiler.
We're here because I think human beings are good. I think human beings, as a general, as a species, we're good. And we want to do the right thing.
And it's the moral framework, what's really scary? Right? You know, like Rod Serling, the moral, the framing of these things in a way that sets us apart from, you know, Tim Burton's Planet of the Apes people.
Right. Oh, God. Wow. It's a bad pull.
That hurts.
I think we inevitably are good because inevitably we need to sustain ourselves and live. So right. We have to live. Otherwise, we are inherently evil. I just want to kill each other. We will destroy ourselves. And if we just end up on our own, we'll just end up on our own. There's no one else to be with. I mean, you know, I think we need each other. At the end of the day, things that go so far, we regroup as people, as human beings, and rediscover ourselves. I think.
Is there anything that's too bleak for you guys? Is there anything that you've seen or read or that you wanted to like, and you just said, you know, this is just doesn't have the. It's too bleak. It doesn't have a heart, or it doesn't. It's nihilistic in a way.
Well, I mean, reading.
Well, comics or news?
Films?
Well, yeah.
I was going to say what's really scary is, for me, what's been really scary is being fucking psychic about all this shit. There's a lot of stuff that I wrote years ago, five years ago, that's come to fruition. Brooklyn Gladiator is the, what I thought, I basically took the headlines and I said, oh, okay, you know, this is the coming technocracy. That's what I wrote. I was like, this is what it's going to look like. We're all going to be fucking walking on line, giant fucking bread lines. Everyone's going to be wearing fucking masks and gas masks. And we're just, everything's going to be redacted and it's going to be Orwellian. And yep. I was like, okay, that's an interesting universe. And fuck, am I far off?
No.
So then I was like, okay, let's do Fishkill because it's happening too quickly. So I got to tell this story right now. And I wrote this two years ago, maybe 2 years ago. And I was like, okay, what are the seeds of this lockdown situation? So what happens is I pay, this is Bernie's art.
Wow.
I love the boys. I live in Brooklyn. There's that incident on the Brooklyn Bridge. And I was like, oh, okay, I want to do a story about that cop who's stuck in the fucking, you know, a meter made car on the fucking Brooklyn Bridge, just watching everybody go by. And then something happens and he has to be the hero. This is about an incident happening where there's a lockdown. They use the opportunity to lock everything down for a long fucking time. And it slips into martial law. They start administering flu shots like it's fucking candy. There's so many there's so many things about it that are reminiscent of what's happening right now. That like Andrew said, you know, when this stuff starts popping up, that's what scares me the most. So what I have recently been doing is meditating on this just being entertainment, a parallel universe. This did not happen. And we're very powerful people. We are very powerful creators, and we can, if we want to think about the outcome of how all this is going to happen, I think that we have that ability to, you know, the Maharishi effect, you know, if we all think on that, look how fucking amazing we are, you know, creative we are, putting our heads together and making this fun stories. But I think that we can also, you know, we can also, if we don't worry, I think if we stay positive, that ripples out and other people get that vibe, and then we can survive all this.
Yeah, hope is very important. Hope is potent. And it sounds hippy dippy, but, you know, hope and maintaining the idea that it's still possible to come out of this better than where we were. And I think it's something that we do over and over again. I mean, you know, this is terrible. This is horrible. But compared to World War I, World War II, the Holocaust, all of this, like, humanity has gone through some dark shit. And we've managed to find a way out of it, having learned. And there's always going to be deniers and naysayers and people who just want to believe what they want to believe because they want to believe it when they want to believe it. But and they're easy to focus on because they're loud. But we also focus on them because they're a contrast to the average person. You know, not to get too political, but I have a friend who lives in Georgia. And after the Capitol riots, he saw, you know, a lot of his neighbors had Trump flags up. Yeah. And after the Capitol riots,
almost all of them started coming down. Like it was almost like there was a bubble that burst and people realized what they were participating in, what were they contributing to, and just said, you know what? No more. We're done. And I think that faced with reality, most people can deny COVID is not real. It's not worse than the flu, blah, blah, blah. But then when someone next to them dies, for most people, reality sinks in. And I think that's one of our great strengths. Yeah. So it's one of our great strengths.
Well, what is it that James Baldwin said is I am alive, therefore I am an optimist. You know, I've always thought that was like such a great baseline, you know, kind of way to approach things. It's like, as long as I'm, you know, I don't have a hatchet sticking out of my face, I want to keep thinking that, you know, things are okay.
That's a very specific thing to think about.
It's crazy though, because you feel like everything is like we're more connected, but it also feels like because we're more connected, we're more detached. Like you just said, until it's happening to you as a neighbor, you don't believe it because we're connected, but everyone's so detached from it that they're like, nah, it seems like a sci-fi movie to me, like a Black Mirror episode. It's not going to happen.
It's interesting
The baselines of optimism are different than like the very idea of like, oh, we can rise to the occasion. Everybody has it. You know, if your idea of rising to the occasion is being like, you know what? I'm not going to listen to the gnomes in my head, and I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to shoot John Lennon, and then I'm going to jump into the Catcher in the Rye like Gumby. And that's your idea, you know, that's rising to the occasion. More and more people are going to be like that, and that's going to be the problem.
Mm.
So,
yeah,
that sucks.
That's a happy thought.
I just ended the party, I think. I don't know. Okay.
Oh, Luke, can you do me a favor? Don't do any zombie shit. Okay, because ignore
Moon Lake then.
I know. I mean, like looking out the next 3 years. When you're looking at the next 3 years with your crystal ball, could you like throw in some like supermodels and like maybe like tap the brakes on the werewolves and shit?
But that's why he does.
Can I meet you halfway?
Fantastic Beasts.
So. No, I want werewolves.
Can I meet you halfway? I can meet you halfway because I got a supermodel with a zombie dinosaur.
That's pretty cool.
That's bonus points. I want to do a werewolf strip club, like where the women, they're peeling off their clothes, and just as they get to the last stuff, all the hair comes out, and they're the werewolves.
Wait, that's fucking hilarious. Wait, Jeff, you have comic books, man. You have stuff to write.
I'm working on it for the first time, dude. Never done anything before.
Cool. Do you want to talk about it, or what's?
I don't know. What's the etiquette like?
I'm going to take all your ideas. That's cool.
We're talking about comedy. No, you can't because they're all stories about him's adventures with Wild Adventures interviewing, right? Basically, that's what you're.
You know, the funny thing is, Dan, there's one thing I'm working on that you're actually a character in. There's a character I'm based on you. That's a true thing.
Is it the werewolf stripper?
It's every werewolf stripper.
It's a good one.
I'm honored if it is. Oh my God, I'm flabbergasted, man.
Well, I'll tell you what it is, but can we all agree that like if someone steals this idea with it, we'll forget all this optimism and we'll just go like shoot them?
Yeah, we'll come to their house.
Because I just really need something.
I mean, that's a given.
We'll just,
stick a machete in the head.
What's that?
You stick a machete in the head.
Back to the divorce. Yeah,
just call shotgun on the whole lycanthropy menstruation thing. You know, that'll make it specific enough for your lawsuit. You'll be good.
Oh my God, that's nasty.
Thanks, good man. Yeah, I always thought that if you put it out like this, it's like a fucking record, then it's on YouTube and it's living there. It's like, come on, how can you dispute? You can't dispute that. We're all fucking witnesses.
Right. That's right.
One of them is a time travel. There's a ship that's launched in the future with all the rich people. It's right before, when there's no future, what do? You go to the past. So everybody picks where they're going to go and they're on the way and they're going to be deposited in the past.
That's cool.
Everything goes wrong because the crew sucks and because their preparation is bad. And it's a comedy. It's a comedy about what happens when go back and try to do things right and everything goes wrong.
Hmm.
Okay.
That was actually the thing I really liked about Seven Soldiers of Victory.
Wow.
You read that? Yeah, the thing about how it's like, oh, the fairies are actually, you know.
Yeah.
I don't want to spoil it, but anyway.
You know what I felt bad for is Wing. Remember Wing, 7-7 Soldiers of Victory? Like the
The
Crimson. He just ceased to exist. Everybody forgot him. And I mean, that's sad. That's sad. They just erased him. And
I'm you guys want to go around? We got about 10 minutes left. You guys want to go around and pitch and just talk about stuff you're working on currently, and then we can schnagaggle a fraggle.
Yes.
I mean, you know, move on. that's my vernacular. so go ahead, Jeff. You want to just kind of start?
I did that. I'll do that.
Well, you got your podcast, man. Talk about your podcast.
Oh yeah, shit. Okay, yeah. So podcast. Kyle Newman's coming on, and I got Rainn Wilson on this week coming up, last week was John Densmore. I mean, it's like Rock and Roll Hall of Fame drummer from The Doors.
Wow, very cool.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome, dude. Amazing.
The Doors, right? That's The Doors.
The Doors. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh wow.
And what's great about John Densmore, I'll keep it short, is that he, Jim Morrison didn't want The Doors to let their songs be used in ads. When the Chevy Opel, they used Light My Fire. He found out, he went crazy and
through a television.
Yeah.
Lit a fire.
Saw the movie.
Yeah. Well, the commercial actually never aired. Oliver Stone just kind of made that up because it never got to the public.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Never aired. So.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah. And the whole JFK thing. Well, never mind. But the thing is that when it happened, the band agreed that everybody had veto power, right? And then Jim dies. And now I meet John Densmore, and I say, you're the most dangerous man in rock and roll. He's the only guy from any classic rock band the Doors are the only classic rock band that's not in TV commercials. Everybody else is. Mm. Everybody now. Beatles, you got Bob Dylan and Kaiser Permanente and Paul McCartney, Fidelity Investments, and Stones, AmeriQuest Mortgage. Like, they're counterculture heroes of the 60s or the house band of modern corporate America, you know, except The Doors because of John Densmore. Ray Manzarek and Robbie Krieger, they sued him for fiduciary irresponsibility. And that's not very rock and roll, dude. Like, fiduciary irresponsibility? Come on.
Great song.
And Manzarek is like, we got to do this. He's passed away since this article ran. But he was like, it's cool now. You can do advertising in tasteful ways. It's not a sellout anymore. So he said, tell Densmore to come join us and we'll go on the road again. And we'll keep this music alive. So I go to John because they're not speaking. So he told me to tell you this. And Densmore, this is classic, goes, yeah, tell him I'll fucking be there when Jim shows up. It's like dark. It was dark. So anyway, that's what I'm up to. That's
just a little. Oh wow, that's amazing.
Wait, end it light.
Dennis, what do you do, man?
I'm working with you on some cool stuff. We got some cartoon stuff we're working on. I'm writing and drawing a graphic novel for Sandy Carpenter about a FBI agent investigating a murder in a small town in which all of the denizens are werewolves, called Second Nature.
Ooh, love that.
So it's basically Twin Peaks with werewolves.
Oh, I love that.
So I'm working on that. And then after that, I'll be working on a children's graphic novel about this sort of classic monsters, Dracula, Frankenstein's monster, but they're all mice. And it's called Mouster's Attack. And I'm looking forward to writing and painting that. And I'm also working on a project that will reveal that Justin looks just like Chris Pine. I'm going to just put that out there.
Thank you.
No one has pointed that out. And it's weird that no one said anything.
Let him know. And then if he needs that stunt.
It's Chris Pine. This is his secret identity.
Chris Pine's dad was on Chips. Did you guys know that?
Yeah, that's right.
Lieutenant Couture. That's Chris Pine's dad. And he did a TV commercial with Shatner, a Priceline commercial, where he's a chauffeur and he's driving Shatner. And he goes, my son's the new Kirk. And Shatner's like, what are you talking about? Like, he got really pissed off.
Oh, that's cool. I've never seen that.
Damn it, stop the car. Daddy, beat me up.
Wait, is that Brando?
That was my Brando. That's how I do it. My impressions are always a combination of two other impressions.
James Tiberius Kirk turned into Jor-El there for a second.
His best impressions are the walking one.
My new show is a mashup impression show. You have to mash.
What do you mean I'm funny? Not funny. Biz. Good.
Me. I'm just getting shit done.
Good man. Good man.
Just getting shit done. Looking after the family.
Nice.
They're safe and, you know, that's about it. And just busy.
And being a fucking legend. You're a fucking legend. I mean, that's a full-time job.
Show Dan what you were drawing. It's pretty badass. He was just working on something before.
No, I'm pretty sure. Oh, by the way, I'm doing it. I've got a lot of Kickstarter stuff I've got to finish. A lot of drawing sketches. Signing a lot of books. So I'm currently doing that.
You gotta come on my podcast, man, please.
If you I knew you guys would. I knew you guys would want to, or Jeff would want to talk to you. So hold on. Who do we got here? So we got Justin. What are you doing, brother?
I'm working with you on a bunch of stuff. We're trying to push this out.
And then what's going on over heavy metal, man? What's you know?
It's going. You know what? We got some cool stuff. Like we got Fishkill 3 is coming out next week, and then we got Fishkill 4, Brooklyn Gladiator 4 coming out. Then we got our trades. We got the second Moon Lake, and we got the third. So last year and this year, we're gonna walk into 2022 as just Dan carrying like a stack of like books and the Comic Cons, hopefully. And then we've been working on a horror game, my own one, using like some tech. It's gonna be like that TV show Mindhunter meets Seven meets.
Oh, that's cool.
Oh, yeah, wow. So I'm trying to make it as like creepy as I possibly can, and then I'll share it.
The busy bass pedal.
Yeah. So I work with pedals on the side, and I sent. Do you guys know that like Busy just shreds? He's like crazy good at guitar.
Oh
man.
Yeah.
So we're gonna work. We're gonna make a bass pedal for Biz. The Busy bass pedal.
Baton.
The BPP.
Dude, I don't think you can get any cooler. Can you get any cooler, dude? Like, that's like dangerously cool. Like,
have him go onto your podcast and just listen to him just jam.
Well, that's a call to theme song. I am not paying for it either, but I'll take it.
Dan, that's the theme song for Brooklyn Glitter. Just have Bisley just.
Yes. Yes.
Heavy as fuck.
Yes. If we change the name for Ghoul Screamer, can we just
have to be that
turn it into that pedal?
Yeah, we can. Yeah. Ooh, and that okay. So that's the other thing. Finishing that up.
Yeah.
Dan got another project we haven't worked on. We have.
Yeah, there's so much going on. There's a lot going on. It's great. And Drew, my brother, so happy to see you, man, live. You happy about all this, man? Got stuff all over the shelves. It's fucking great, right?
Yeah.
What Star Wars stuff? You're doing a lot of Star Wars stuff right now.
Yeah. I've been working on, I've been doing a lot of audio only stuff. Alexa, they call them skills or like games apps. And the one now that's actually currently part of it's out, C-3PO Translates. And I actually got to write it with Anthony Daniels. Really cool.
Oh, cool.
And so far, right, it's part of that's the awesome. Amazon Alexa Free Time Unlimited. You learn Shriwook and Droid Speak. I just finished the first draft of the Ewokies update. And then I'm going to do Huddies. And that's just a lot of fun.
That's awesome.
And I'm trying to like recanonize all these old Ewok things like the Duloks and the Sun King and all that stuff, you know? So that's a lot of fun. That's been a blast. I've been trying to see if like I could get the vaccine, but apparently teaching people Ewokies is an essential service.
I call nonsense on that.
Yeah. So,
Yub Nub, my friend.
I want to get, I know, right? Yub Nub means freedom, and it also means hooray, just so you guys know. Yeah.
Just another word for nothing left to lose.
Eager to get back into comics. Also, because if you live in Los Angeles, you actually have to have a podcaster, they make you leave. Apparently. I started a new podcast, I was on an old podcast, started a new one called Let's Kill Ourselves. And the most recent episode that came out was about how the Domino's Pizza Noid was cursed because they
based
on the shamans of the indigenous Sami people of Finland.
Right. That makes sense. No, that makes sense.
So, yeah. There you go. Shit.
It tracks
all the time.
Yeah.
I'm going to sign off now with great love as Jabba the Hutt.
I'm going to say this right now and bestow great love and honor and treasures onto all of you in Huttese. You ready? Utakatita ita mol man ita chita kutata andro arisa ia pilotai. Then as Calero, or you know, we got chicha. Bees. Bees. And we got chicha porta butcher. Butcher. Ida, ida, ida.
Oh, it's more.
Wait, what, did I fuck that up? What happened?
Oh, that's good.
And then someone has, yeah, salacious crumb, yes. Someone comes. His- All right, perfect. Mwah, I love you guys. That was great. Thank you for going on.
Yeah.
Take it away, man. We-